Hey, Bills Mafia. We know there's only one topic every day. All Bills, all the time. And now Matt Bove and Sal Capaccio are going really deep, talking Bills all year long, because it's always game day in Buffalo.
You know, there was a time where we were just so jacked up to get one primetime game in Buffalo, right? Cowboys on Monday night, Browns on Monday night. Okay, yeah, the Patriots are coming on a Sunday night, the Bills are going there on a Monday night. That's all right, we'll take it. But man, Matt, I have heard from so many people more and more this year than ever before saying, can you just get me back to a Sunday at 1 p.m.? This is tough on my body, right? And look, I get it from our standpoint. We look at this a little bit differently because we cover the team. We're there. We're traveling and all that. But just from a Buffalo Bills and fan standpoint and body standpoint for you and fan standpoint, what is it like now with all these primetime games versus in years past?
Well, it's a grind. It's a grind for us. It's a grind for the players. It's a grind for the fans. 4 out of 6 primetime games to start the season is pretty ridiculous. And then when you add in that three of their last three games, with this counting this Jets game coming up, will be games on the road. That does not happen a ton in the NFL. So when I first saw the schedule, I always kind of looked at it as the first 6 games and then the rest of the schedule, because quite frankly, the first 6 games were a pretty tough start, but also those 4 out of the 6 primetime games, the 3 in a row on the road, like those are all difficult things for the Bills. I feel like once they get through this week, then they can kind of get back to normal a little bit, get back into a bit more normal of a routine. I mean, even the practice schedule has been all out of whack for the last couple weeks because there's been night games, there's been weird travel mixed in. So it has felt like very jumbled, which is okay because it's about to come to an end.
After this Monday night at the Jets, Monday night, October 14th, the Bills have 5 straight Sunday games. One of those is a 4 p.m. game. That's Seattle. One's a 4:25. That's Kansas City. But 5 straight Sunday afternoon games, then a bye week, then another Sunday night. But it's pretty much Sundays the rest of the way. There's no more Monday night games scheduled. Mm-hmm. There is one primetime game scheduled. So as you said, they get back into routine. And I would say, to your other point about the schedule, looking ahead after this game, now the Jets are not off to a great start, but it is the Jets. We know that there's going to be a tough game. Titans, Seahawks, Dolphins, Colts. Matt, I mean, I don't think it's unrealistic to put some expectation on this team to win at least 3 and maybe expect 4.
Yeah, I think they have to. I think depending on what happens against the Jets, you absolutely have to win 3 of the next 4. And then if you lose to the Jets, I think that you can make the argument you got to go on a run and win all 4 of these games. I think they're capable of it. I think that they'll be favored in all of these games. Weird stuff happens in the NFL. What'll probably ultimately happen is that they'll win a game they're not supposed to win, and they'll lose a game they're not supposed to lose, just because that's what happens in this league. But I do feel like this is the time to kind of go on a run. And that's why when we said, hey, the first 6 games are hard, I mean, we have the hindsight now of knowing that they started 3-0. A lot of people probably would have signed up for 3-3. Now, 3-3 does not sound so nice after starting 3-0. If you get this win, though, against the Jets, I do really think, like, okay, the sky is not falling. No reason to panic. They should be able to go on a little run and build themselves a little bit of a buffer. Because also, if they win this game on Monday Night Football, they have built a very nice cushion within the division early in the season. They would have, at this point, head-to-head wins against the Jets and the Dolphins on the road, and they'd essentially be 2 games up on both of those teams.
And you'd still have 2 games left against the Patriots, who just look like maybe the worst team in the league at times right now, and they're switching to a rookie quarterback. So that's at the back end. That's what I've always liked about the schedule from just an overall view, which is you get the Patriots at the end twice. If you're in a spot where you need some wins, you can look and go, okay, like we have opportunity for some wins right here. It's always game day in Buffalo. Sal Capaccio, Matt Bove, thanks a lot for downloading, listening, writing reviews, giving us nice ratings, subscribing, and of course, watching on the YouTube channel at Sal Sports on YouTube. So make sure you go there. Whenever we do something new, it's right there. You got a whole bunch of content on the YouTube page. And of course, wherever you pod, it doesn't matter. You can just listen to us all the time. Now, you said something interesting. If they get this win against the Jets, the sky isn't falling. Of course, does it matter how they win to you? Does it matter what? Yeah, in the standings, it does not. We know that.
Sure.
I'll be the first to say, like, hey, man, look at the Chiefs. They've squeaked out some wins. They're 5-0. Who cares, right? They're 5-0. Does it matter to you, though, if the Bills win this game, super ugly offense, they can't move, but just the Jets make a few mistakes, and the Bills walk out of there with a 20-17, oh, my God, how did they do that win, versus, you know what, the offense got back on track. They actually put some stuff together. They look really good. I'm feeling better.
No, it does not matter how they win. If they win, especially against this opponent with a good defense, with the added buzz of a new head coach, with a new play caller on the road against Aaron Rodgers. You know what it's honestly like? We're recording this on Friday morning. The Sabres played a really good game on Thursday night in their home opener and lost. You know what's better than losing and looking good? Winning and looking bad.
That's right.
I don't think it matters personally. I think if you go to New York, it's a tough place for them the last couple of years. It has not been a place where they've had success. If you come back with a win and you're 4-2, you know, the conversation I think should still be about contending for one of the top seeds in the AFC. If you lose, the conversation is going to be, are you even the best team in the division? Do you deserve to win the AFC East? I mean, the Jets will, it's early, but the Jets will leapfrog you. They will be in first place in the AFC East. So there's a lot riding on this Monday Night Football game, even though it is just a random week six game. Just get the win. If that means you win 10-9, then so be it.
Well, let's talk about how they could get that win, because it's going to be maybe even more difficult considering some of the offensive injuries. Still no Khalil Shakir at practice. He's been working off to the side. You and I have been out there. He has an ankle injury. He missed one game. He, you know, obviously was hobbled in the early on in the game against the Ravens. He missed the game against the Texans. But now they're also dealing with an injury to, I guess I would say, their second best offensive weapon next to Josh Allen. Yeah. And outside of him, maybe their best and most important, which is James Cook. We know the offense has struggled without Khalil Shakir. You take James Cook out of the offense, boy, it's a very big concern for the Buffalo Bills. But right now, it looks like not trending in the right way for James Cook.
Yeah, it's a bit concerning, right? I mean, I don't exactly know what they're going to do. I don't know if this would just be, Ty Johnson or Ray Davis, your next man up. Or if they would just change their philosophy completely for the week and just really not focus on running the ball at all, which might not be a bad thing if they were passing the ball well, or if they had Khalil Shakir, but they might not have their number one wide receiver and they have not been passing the ball well. So, man, we talk about, hey, you got to get Dawson Knox more involved. You got to get Curtis Samuel more involved. You got to use these guys. You have to. Well, they quite literally will have to if they go into this game without James Cook and without Khalil Shakir. I still feel like maybe one of them plays, but I definitely do not get the sense that both of them play. Unless they both practice on Saturday and they have the extra day's rest. But, you know, I just don't know if that's going to happen.
It feels to me like Shakir's a bit closer based on what I saw at practice. Now, that just is my observation by seeing Shakir was actually working with Mike White, throwing in some footballs, and Shakir was working with a trainer to kind of do some get off, do some footwork stuff. Whereas Cook, he's really just been doing kind of some stuff with the trainers on the side and then walking over to the offense and watching what's going on. You made a good point the other day that, okay, that's a good sign that he's not in just out of sight. Maybe you're keeping him up in the game plan. I agree with that, but it feels like 2 days of missed practice here, only one day left. And by the way, so everybody knows, we're recording on a Friday. Bills will not have practice on a Friday. On Friday, they will have their normal Friday practice on a Saturday because of the Monday night game, and we'll find out. That said, obviously, you'd love to have both of them. You might not, but it looks like at least you'll have Curtis Samuel. But at this point, you just wonder what he gives you anyway, because they just haven't figured out how to use him.
Curtis Samuel and Dalton Kincaid, to me, I mean, Dawson Knox is in this conversation too. It's all offensive guys are all in the conversation for the most disappointed player 5 weeks into the season. And maybe that doesn't even have directly to do with the player. It just has to do with the usage. Those guys I had expectations for, and they can still turn it around. Five games does not define a season. I thought Dalton Kincaid would be like a 90 catch guy this year after what we saw last year. And he has not been used nearly as often as he needs to. Curtis Samuel, every time they throw him the ball, basically something bad happens. They don't know how to use him down the field. They know how to use him behind the line of scrimmage, and it usually ends up in either an incomplete pass or a loss of yards. And Dawson Knox just doesn't get thrown the football. So those three guys like are all meant to contribute, and none of them are.
Yeah, I hear you. And everybody eats is great, and it sounds really good, but you have expectations of little lower totals for everybody in that case. But in this case, what's happening is not only is not everybody eating, not one person's eating to pick up the slack. It just hasn't been there. Last week, obviously, only 9 completions overall for Josh Allen, 9 of 30. So you weren't going to get much out of that. When you talk about, you know, possibly running the ball, so what does that look like? Well, if you don't have James Cook, I'll get your thoughts on this. I've been asked this on WGR this week. My thought is, I think the Bills would roll with Ty Johnson first, but you'd still have pretty good splits of carries maybe between him and Ray Davis. And the reason is, look, I'll be the first to tell you, I think it's way overblown that Sean McDermott doesn't play rookies. He does play rookies. But I do think Monday Night Football at the Jets, big situation like this, I think he'd probably trust to roll with Ty Johnson a little bit before Ray Davis and let Ray Davis get into the game and get going. And then you go from there. And obviously you'd probably have Frank Gore elevated from the practice squad. It is interesting that they did open the practice window for Darrington Evans from IR this same week that James Cook is dealing with the foot-toe injury.
I feel like Ty Johnson is the safer move. Ray Davis is the move that has a bit more upside, but also could go a bit worse, and that's why they would take Ty Johnson. Also, Ty Johnson revenge game going against his former team in New York. Ty Johnson just makes plays. I'm very impressed with him as a secondary running back, with what he can do in the passing game, what he can do on the ground. It feels like every game he has a big play. And listen, I think that's an important aspect for the Bills, and I think that they need somebody like that. So I agree with you. I do think that this would be more Ty Johnson than Ray Davis. I think the touches might be pretty similar because I think they'd use Ray Davis a little bit more in the passing game. But that said, I mean, they just completed 9 passes a week ago, so who knows what they're going to look like.
That said, the Bills, the Jets, still an excellent, excellent defense.
Yeah, they're fantastic.
They're number one in the league in yards per play against. They're number two in the league in total yards per game against. They're number one in the league in passing yards per play against. They're 9th in the league in rushing yards per play against. So if you're looking for something that maybe you can do against them, it will be running the ball. The Bills' messaging this week, and I wouldn't expect any different, is really just concentrating on themselves, right? Because obviously you have this team in the Jets who's trying to get back into it here, has a chance to overtake them for first place, and they fired their head coach. So that's been the storyline this week. And now, without Robert Saleh, there's been a lot of talk about this firing and head coach bump and what to expect from them. Now that you've sat with it for a few days, Matt, do you think, will the Jets be any different from different play caller now, right? They go from Nathaniel Hackett to Todd Downing. They literally took the play calling duties away from Nathaniel Hackett, although I don't think they took the offensive coordinator title away from him, right? They just took the play calling duties. Todd Downing comes in. Do you expect anything different? Should the Bills just kind of be on high alert for, wow, they could unveil something completely that we haven't seen yet?
I think they're going to run the ball a lot. I think that this is going to be the Breece Hall show, and that's another reason why I'm a bit concerned for the Bills. I mean, Aaron Rodgers has thrown way too many passes the last couple weeks, and I know Breece Hall has not played up to his standard. I think a lot of that is the offensive line in front of him. I get that. But Breece Hall against a Bills defense that has not been great at stopping the run seems like it could be a bad and dangerous recipe for the visiting team, for the Bills. So that's what I think they're going to look like this week. I think Aaron Rodgers is still going to take his shots, but where are the Bills strong? Out wide with trying to stop Garrett Wilson, trying to stop Mike Williams. Like, their corners are going to be the ones that they trust the most, and I think they're going to try and attack the middle of the field. And that means, to me, screen passes to Breece Hall and to Allen and running the ball with their two running backs who are both really good. So I think it's trending in the direction that Taron Johnson is going to play. I think Taylor Rapp is probably also going to play. That's going to help, but it's not going to solve everything. And that's why it just sets up for kind of a tricky game for the Bills.
No, I agree with that. Let's talk about the injuries here on the defensive side, because we saw the difference Terrell Bernard can make in the middle of the field. And I mean, look, excuse me, sorry about that. Bealen Specter did some nice things, but there's a clear difference between Bealen Specter and Terrell Bernard and what Terrell Bernard can give you in both the pass and the run game. My concern with Bealen Specter was the pass game. And sure enough, Terrell Bernard makes a heck of a play for that interception. That's just not a play Bealen Specter you expect him to make, right? Terrell Bernard makes that play. You see that. What I think is even more important here is I think Dorian Williams is better when Terrell Bernard's next to him than Bealen Specter, because he can do so many more different things that he's more comfortable doing versus having to, because I think Specter and Bernard and Williams, excuse me, are kind of the same type of player. We're certainly not with Bernard. So it reminds me a lot of basketball. It's a basketball analogy. A lot of times you'll see a team just doesn't have a point guard. So they'll take their shooting guard and make them a point guard. Well, that kind of doesn't let everybody else kind of fit into their normal roles. If you have a normal, real good point guard, you let the shooting guard be the shooting guard. And now you have two guys who actually are doing exactly what they're supposed to be doing, and everything flows better. I think it's the same way at linebacker for the Bills. And we saw that with Terrell Bernard. Now you add Taron Johnson in. I think the same thing is here. There's certainly, he's an all pro. He's one of the best, if not the best at his position. But what also allows you to do is allows Cam Lewis now maybe to be a depth safety, a dime safety. It allows everybody else to kind of fit into their roles a little bit better. Not that you had so much going on there, but Taron Johnson in the middle of the field, as you said, Taylor Rapp back. I do think this could make a big difference.
Yeah, I think Taron Johnson is obviously the biggest one. I think the safety position is still just my biggest concern defensively, but I do think that Taron Johnson will cover up a lot of problems in the middle of the field because he is that good. And I do think that it's a positive sign that the first couple days of practice this week, it's not feel like they have held him back with any of the contact that he's done. You posted some videos on it. He took the non-contact jersey off. I think that these are all signs in the right direction. Taron Johnson, to me and to a lot of people, has always been basically a linebacker who can cover almost anybody. I mean, during the I don't want to say the glory years, but during the last several years with the Bills, when they had Milano, Edmonds, who was always the guy next to him? It was Taron Johnson. He was the one basically working as the third linebacker. So even though he is a nickel corner, he is just as much their next linebacker who can kind of help in the run game, who can cover people in the middle of the field. And I think that this will help them. So that's a positive sign. Getting Taron Johnson back might be, to me, more impactful than anybody that they have had injured so far this season. I think he is that good. That's how highly I think of him. Still don't know if it's enough, though, because of the lack of consistent play behind him at safety, and also because of the inconsistent play of the defensive line that has really left a lot to be desired so far this season.
All right, let's talk about the defensive line, because that Oliver not practicing at all a couple days. I do not expect him to be available on Monday night simply by the practice participation this week. He has not been available. However, Dwayne Carter looked really good against the Houston Texans, did some really nice things. Without Ed Oliver, you're like, okay, there's another guy, you know, really good player. But if Dwayne Carter can play like that, it certainly mitigates the loss of Ed Oliver.
Yes and no. I agree that Dwayne Carter looked good and he had a good game. Not, though, as dynamic as what Ed Oliver can be. Now, Ed Oliver has not been that most of this year, so it did not feel like the drop-off was as significant. But I do think there are times when Ed Oliver makes plays that very few players in the league can make. And with a quarterback like Aaron Rodgers, and with a line like the Bills have defensively, sometimes you need the interior pressure. Dwayne Carter's plays came, his big splash plays, he had a couple tackles for loss, but they were on a run in a screen pass, and it was not necessarily getting after the quarterback. He did get pressure up the middle a few times, but it never led to a sack or anything. Like, I just think they're missing getting to the quarterback. It is not consistently happening. Really, in the last game, the only play I can remember really making a difference was the Smoot forced fumble, where he did it all himself, basically. Other than that, Greg Rousseau hasn't really flashed. Von Miller is obviously suspended. AJ Epenesa has not been up, you know, playing up to his standard. Solomon has flashed. He's just not on the field a lot. So, yeah, like, Dwayne Carter looked pretty good, but I still feel like that unit as a whole needs to look better.
Yeah, no, I don't disagree with that. I think that the Von Miller suspension hurts this unit. It doesn't, you know, that's a guy that has off to a good start. It obviously allows for a little bit even more of a rotation. I'm talking about Dwan Smoot and what you said about, you know, what he's been able to do. Obviously he can play inside. He can play outside a little bit. That has been an area of concern. Now in this game, particularly, look, you're playing a 40-year-old Aaron Rodgers who early in the season, I said, man, he's moving around a little bit, but last few games, you could tell, I think that he's been banged up. He's been hurting. This is a game where if you could just keep him in the pocket and then try to make him move off his spot a little bit, I think that could really help. You just can't let him sit back there and throw darts. Where they're really hurting here in this game for this particular reason is Ed Oliver's interior penetration. Mm-hmm. You get interior penetration and force Aaron Rodgers to move left or right, I think that's a real good start to a play. Mm-hmm. You just can't let him sit back there and, you know, throw darts because he's still very accurate.
Yeah, this has got to be a matchup the Bills win. Their defensive line needs to beat the Jets' offensive line and needs to make Aaron Rodgers move and be uncomfortable. That's also why, though, going back to what we were talking about earlier, I don't think the Jets' offense is going to look the same. I do not think that this is going to be the Aaron Rodgers show like it has been with Hackett. I think it's going to be the Breece Hall show, and I think that Aaron Rodgers is going to take 20 passes in this game. And they're going to be very quick releases that they just know are going to have high percentage, you know, completion percentages. So that's why I think you got to stop the run and put them into disadvantage are poor situations. You got to put them in third and long, and then your defensive line has to win. So I think a lot of this comes down to how do you stop the run? And if you do that, then you will have opportunities to take over the game with what should be the Jets' weakness or one of your advantages, which is the defensive line against their offensive line.
Garrett Wilson is a fantastic receiver. Obviously, you know, he's got some numbers this year, but even in New York, they're like, you know, maybe he should be even better. They can't get him the ball as much, whatever. He's fantastic. From what you've seen from how great Christian Benford's played this year, Rasul Douglas hasn't been bad at all by any means. I'm not suggesting that. Would you want to see one of them travel or just kind of play each side and do what you do?
It's not what they do. It's not what they do. Maybe they will at some point because Christian Benford is that good.
Yeah.
But that's not what they do. So I don't think philosophically they're just going to change something for a Garrett Wilson. They've played some really elite wide receivers so far this season. So I think that they're going to try and keep kind of the same approach. That's one thing to their credit. Now, Nico Collins goes over the top for a huge touchdown on one play. They haven't really been killed by a wide receiver this year. They were on that play, but that was more Cole Bishop than anybody else, to be honest. So I think they'll kind of keep the same philosophy and just hope that with Taron back and with Taylor Rapp back, that their second lines of defense besides their corners will just be stronger.
Okay. Earlier this week, Marcel Reis, who used to be a member of the Raiders, apparently he's either friends or knows whatever with Devontae Adams because he was on Kay Adams' show and he said, I'm closer to the situation probably than I should be, I think is how he phrased it. And he mentioned that there was a mystery team involved in the Devontae Adams trade talks that people aren't talking enough about. She then guessed, does it rhyme with Schmills? And he said, yes, and laughed, basically. So it's the Bills. What do you think about this?
You take that. They were talked about on ESPN's Get Up on Thursday morning by Adam Schefter. He mentioned them as one of the four teams, I believe, that were interested. I think it was like the Jets, the Saints, the Bills, and there was like one other team that he had mentioned. Oh, the Ravens. Those were the four teams that he specifically mentioned.
Yeah, by the way, how about Devontae Adams posting a picture of Edgar Allan Poe on his Instagram last week?
Wide receivers are just the best. The stuff that they do.
Amazing.
Here's what I think. I think the Bills are interested. If the Raiders are going to retain a bunch of salary or if it doesn't cost a second round pick, but I don't think they'll ultimately get it done because I think there will be a team that will pay a higher price than they are willing to pay. I don't necessarily know if that's a bad thing either. I think Devontae Adams is a very good player, and I think he would immediately make the Bills a better team. But they just got rid of their over 30 wide receiver who had a little bit of drama off the field for this reason. And it just feels very out of character for them to then just go and find another over 30 wide receiver who's creating a bit of drama off of the field. And for what it's worth, Devontae Adams is older than Stephon Diggs. So if your plan was to get younger and cheaper at wide receiver, this doesn't necessarily align there. And Devontae Adams also has another year left on his deal. So this is not just a rental. This would be like, oh, you're taking on a massive cap hit next year also.
Well, yes, but it's easily to get out of. All the money's taken care of. You could trade for his contract now and just release him at the end of the year. You owe nothing next year.
It'd be
a rental. All you're on the hook for is the base salary. You could just get rid of it.
Okay. All right. Well, that's good to know.
So the cap hit for the new team is not the same as the cap hit for the Raiders next year.
Okay. Because isn't the cap hit next year for the Raiders like $36 million or something next year?
Something like that. It's like it's like 25 to 30 million base salary, but that's all you'd be on the hook for. If you release him, you pay nothing.
Do you think it's worth...
I'm going to say I agree with everything you said, but I'm also going to say I think the Bills also look around the AFC and go, wait a minute, we had a shot at this. So this might be counter. Sometimes you pivot, right? As I always say, it's okay to change your mind on things if you have new information. Like, you know, the Twitter website, Old Takes Exposed, right?
Yeah.
Oh, my God, this guy said this. And you're like, sometimes you're like, yeah, I did. Guess what? I changed my mind because I saw something different.
Sure.
It is possible. Brandon Bean and his staff go, look, everybody eats is great, and this is our philosophy. We didn't want this kind of player. Guess what? We didn't know that we'd have such a great look at being still in the mix here for a number one seed. Let's go do something like this. So from that standpoint, I could see that. The financial standpoint, I agree completely with you, which is it's tough for the Bills. It's very tough. Marcel Reis also said he doesn't expect anything in days. He thinks weeks. That leads me to teams are waiting for that price to come down $1 million a week, essentially.
$1 million a week.
Or the salary. And we're looking more towards a trade deadline type of deal. Now, in that case, maybe you could work a little something out. You can do some creative financing on your end. You can have the Raiders eat some money, which I keep saying they're not going to do. That could be negotiating as well. They typically don't do that anyway. That could be it. And I also just looked. Marcel Reese, by the way, isn't just a former player. I didn't realize this. He's a former executive who was a senior advisor to the Raiders owner and president, and Mark Davis, and also senior vice president / chief of staff just 2 years ago. So this is a guy, when he speaks, I guess I'm going to have to listen.
You know, it's funny. You sit here and you talk about Marcel Reese with all of these jobs, and I just think, was Marcel Reese on the team when the Bills beat the Raiders in like week two of their home opener that year? They started 3-0,
yes,
where they came back, right? He had to have been. Why else would I really know what Marcel Reese?
No, he wasn't on that team. He stopped playing in 2016.
No. That team would have been what, 2011?
Oh, I'm sorry. I thought you were talking about just a couple of years ago. The Bills beat the Raiders.
No. I'm talking about when they beat the Raiders week two. With
yes,
the big
he was on
and
that
then they
team.
Beat the
he
Patriots in team. Week three. I yes. feel like he had some big plays in that game specifically.
Yes.
Ben is okay. I'm looking it up now. Okay. Yeah. I mean, listen, I think that they're interested. I think that they're always interested. I also think that Brandon Bean is very calculated, and he might not be actually interested in just trying to drive the price up for somebody else who he knows is, whether that's the Ravens, whether that's the Jets. If those are two of the other four teams that have been linked to Devontae Adams, I bet Brandon is lurking to either try and get something done or make sure that if one of those other teams gets something done, it's going to cost them more than they're comfortable paying. And I think that would specifically be true for the Jets. Because I think he's like, listen, if this guy's coming in the division, like, we're going to make them pay a premium because we're going to make it seem like we're also interested.
I also think he truly would like to see what happens over the next few weeks with his group, right? Like, why do it now? Like, see what happens on Monday night. See what happens the following week. What can they kind of fix some of the things here that are going on with the wide receiver position, which obviously people are pointing to the lack of separation. I've said it, and you know how everything's kind of operating right now. So maybe they just want to wait a few weeks. It is a very, very, you know, interesting situation going on, Devontae Adams.
Can we close out with one thing that is like a very legitimate question? And
yes.
You're going to roll your eyes because you know I'm going to ask you.
My God.
But it's about, yes. I'm still very convinced that this happens. If they are good, if they fall apart, he's not coming back and playing for a team that's not good.
So now I'm to the point of, because you've been on this way too early, and I said, what I've always said, I said, when you get to
halfway through the season,
October, November, that's something I'm going to start to think could possibly happen. Here we are, Matt. Mm-hmm. I still think it's a little early, but I do think we're getting to the point where I could see something like that happening. I'll start to agree with you. My point of contention with you always was they're not doing it like when you think they're doing it in September and week two, and they're just not going to happen.
But, what they should do and what they will do are not necessarily the same thing. My point has always been the safeties are not good, and he would be the best safety on the team. Your point has always been neck injury, guy who's considering retirement. Mm-hmm. Why would he come back and play a full season? My stance has always been it is the Bills' job to try and get him back as soon as possible to cover up those problems. And now I know that has not happened, but we're not talking. I understand like getting him for the end of the year and potentially a playoff run is far more important than the first 5 weeks of the season. But to me, it is still the worst position on the team, maybe wide receiver is right now, that has cost them in several moments. And that's why I think the sooner you can get that guy back, the better.
I just want to clarify. I don't think the Bills were that eager to get him back. Not just him. I don't think the Bills have been eager to get him back.
That's where I disagree. I think they should have been more eager.
I know you think
look what's
been
on the field.
They should have been. Yeah, maybe. I mean, but it's not just for me, the neck injury. Why would he come back? I just think this is something where, hey, keep in shape. We'll talk. If we need you, we'll call you. We'll see where it goes. He's like, yeah, I don't know what I'm going to do. I don't think either team is super eager. Either side here has from the beginning been super eager for him to play. It's more of a, you know, I'll pick you up and I'll call you when we need to call you, if we need to call you.
Yeah.
And we'll see. That's what it's been for me all along. And there's never been any sort of urgency on either side. I don't think the Bills have been, they wanted to see what their safeties could do. And to your point, maybe now you've seen what they could do. So they should do something like this. I still think it might be a little early for that. I mean, it's still only week five, but I do think we're getting to the point where I've always said, hey, you start to get to Halloween into November, this is something. I could see it. I'm still not convinced that it's going to get something that's going to happen.
I disagree with the idea of like, well, we'll see what happens if we need you, because I don't think that there has ever been a world where they have not planned on having him back in some capacity this year.
Oh, I do.
The way that they've talked. I feel like they have left things so intentionally open-ended. Even like a week ago, Sean McDermott was asked about Micah Hyde, and he was like, you know how we feel about Micah. We love Micah. Of course, that's a door that's always open. I'm paraphrasing. Mm-hmm. That's not a direct quote. But that's not what teams say about players that are not on their team. Ever. Ever. They have had every opportunity to say, we like the safety group we have, and we will move, or we like the safety group we have. We appreciate everything Micah Hyde did for us. Obviously, if his...
Do you really think they would say that we're not going to do that? Dude, Brandon Bean said this about OBJ.
I mean, they've closed the door on other players. Like Jordan Poyer.
They released him.
Before that happens, though, remember Sean saying when somebody asked what Mike, it was me actually, it was what Micah Hyde meant to you as a coach during these last several years. And he was like, yeah, he changed the culture here, him and Jordan Poyer. Like Jordan Poyer was still under contract and he closed the door on both of them before he was even off the team. I just think it's happening. Nothing will ever convince me otherwise until they.
Okay, but you don't get to claim some sort of put flag victory here if it happens in at the end of October, November, when I've been saying from the beginning, this is not happening anytime soon.
Absolutely not. And this is far from like an exclusive idea on this podcast. It is not like other people aren't. Search Micah Hyde's name on Twitter right now. And if you go to the last game, it's going to be a bunch of tweets from fans during the game of just like, this stinks. We need Micah Hyde back. Yeah. So. I just think that it's going to happen, and I'm getting closer to, I think, it becoming a reality sooner rather than later.
Yeah, I don't think it. I would never expect them to close the door on a player with like that stature and that respect. I think that would they would feel that would be almost kind of disrespectful to do that. So that's why I wouldn't surprise. But I also believe it's true that the door's open. You know what I mean? Like the door would be open.
Yeah.
Not like super eager to push it down necessarily, but let's see. And right now they are in a position. Now Taylor Rapp is coming back. We'll see how the safeties perform. Okay. Real quickly here. The Patriots are switching to Drake May. Your thoughts really quick.
It's tough because the situation does not seem like it's one where there will be success, but I am also a big trial by fire guy. Mm-hmm. Like Drake May is going in to a terrible offensive line with a team that does not have a lot of weapons, and they're going against the Texans, so it's a really tough game. I would have probably waited a little bit longer, but I also think you got to play when you got to play, and you got to give the other guys on the team incentive to try and play. Like, I think they clearly knew that they did not have a chance to win with Jacoby Brissett. So why is anybody else going? You know what I mean? Like, why do you care? Why do you try and put all your effort in besides pride if you know that your team isn't even trying to win? So I think that they had to do this sooner rather than later.
All right. Well, everybody's kind of waiting all day for Monday night in this case and watching some Sunday games. Another Sunday game I just want to touch on before we go. Maybe we find out how for real the Commanders really are. They look great right now. But Jaden Daniels, 4-1, the Commanders go to 3-2, the Ravens. And obviously Washington, Baltimore, that's a huge kind of proximity rivalry, geographic rivalry right there. Right. But what are the chances you give the Commanders going to Baltimore and making the Ravens 3-3?
I think the Ravens are the second best team in football. So I think that they are going to beat the Commanders, and I think that they would beat the Commanders pretty handedly.
Disagree.
Okay. I like the Commanders. I think that they're trending in a fantastic direction. I think that they are way ahead of schedule. I think Jaden Daniels is awesome. I don't think they have played a team like the Ravens yet. I think the Ravens are very good. I mean, I don't have it in front of me. I would love to see who have the Commanders beaten, right?
They beat the Giants, Bengals, Cardinals, Browns.
Okay.
And in those games, in the last three games, they've scored 38, 42, and 34.
Sure. Yeah. Bengals defense, terrible. Cardinals defense, Browns. We saw what the Bills did in the second half against them. Browns defense, I feel like they got up kind of ahead, and then the Browns just, you know, threw up on themselves. So, I mean, listen.
I do give the Commanders a really good chance here. I think this is the kind of game that every year Baltimore, I mean, they already had that game. They lost to the Raiders, remember, Baltimore, right? I mean, they do have those games, but I would pick the Ravens to win. In fact, I did. I'm in these pick 'em leagues or whatever, and I picked the Ravens to win. But I think that this is a game that the Ravens better be on the lookout for.
This is one of those games where I think in my head, because I do not know the betting line, I think in my head, what should the betting line be? And then if the line is drastically different than what I think it should be, then maybe that sways me into making some sort of decision. So now, without even looking at it, is it involved? Is it? I've got it in front of me too. Is it? I haven't looked at it yet, though. Is it in Baltimore or Washington?
Is it in Baltimore?
I would say the Ravens are favored by 5.5 without looking at it.
6.5 Okay. And it was actually started at 8
I think that's a good line. I think that I would take the Ravens there. What does the Bills line up to, by the way?
The Bills are favored, right?
The Bills are favored by 2.5 on the road. So yes. I believe it opened at 3 It's been bet to 2.5 So okay. That's not a shocker by any stretch. No. Yeah, I mean, that makes sense. But also, like, here's the perspective, which is crazy, considering the Bengals are, you know, 1-4 Who do you think is more likely to win this week? The Giants hosting the Bengals on Sunday Night Football or the Jets hosting the Bills on Monday Night Football?
Jets.
Exactly. The line for the Bengals is 3.5 and the line for the Bills has been floating around 2.5 at 3 So Vegas is like giving it basically the same shot.
Bengals defense is not good, and the Giants have actually played some decent football, inspiring football, the last couple of weeks. Hey, last thing, while we are in New York, New Jersey, Monday night, there's an ALDS game going on. I thought that they would wait till Tuesday to play it, but the Yankees are actually at home on Monday night, the same time that that's happening. So unfortunately, we won't be able to go to any baseball games. Not that you necessarily would, but I'm like, oh yeah. What are they playing? No game five. The Yankees wrapped everything up, but actually that's actually going to be going on the same time we're in, we're at the Jets covering that game.
I believe it's the Mets play in the afternoon that day. And then the Yankees play an hour before the Bills and the Jets. And then the Jets play, like, what an elite Monday. Adam Schefter had some sort of tweet about that. Obviously
it is a holiday too.
I know that you were a Yankees fan.
Yes.
A lot of people who are listening to this are Yankees fans. I wish you all nothing but happiness and health. I don't want the Yankees to win. I just don't like the Yankees. It's probably that one team to me that I enjoy rooting against more than I've married into a Mets family. So they have been over the moon the last couple days. So I've jumped on that bandwagon. Like, my in-law's dog's name is Shea. For Shea Stadium.
Wow.
That is how they hardcore Mets fans. So I'm on that bandwagon. If they were to make it to the World Series, it would have to be against the Yankees. That would be amazing. A Subway Series again would be so cool. But I don't want to see the Yankees win the ALCS. I just don't like the Yankees. They're just that team I don't like.
Yeah, and Monday is a holiday, so you know that that's part of the reason why you're getting, you know, those games as well. And, you know, in the afternoon, like you said, yeah, 4 o'clock start.
Let me put a plea out. Anybody who's listening or watching this podcast, I've heard there are restaurants in New York City. Shocking, right? But I need like a good recommendation. Because I feel like every time I go back to New York City, I go to the same place.
Oh, really? Oh, I can give you a few. Our buddy Bill Whippert and I, we've gone out many times at restaurants in New York City. We have some really great ones.
Here's my problem, okay? It's not a problem. It's a good problem to have. I always just go to Italian restaurants because New York has fantastic Italian food. We got great Italian food in Buffalo, too. I want to try something different. I want to try like some sort of different type of cuisine that I do not regularly have here.
Steakhouse?
No, because once again, like you can get a good steak in Buffalo. You can get good everything in Buffalo, but I want something that I don't necessarily often have. So if you've got any cool like recommendations for restaurants in New York City, fire them to us because I will definitely look at them.
And try. You're going to get a ton of them. That's just fine. No
which
doubt.
Is fine, which is good.
Little Italy, Chinatown. I mean, there's going to be a lot of places in different areas of the city that people are going to recommend, no doubt about it. And that's okay.
Yeah.
There's a really cool Italian place in Times Square we like to go to, but that's Italian, obviously. So.
Olive Garden. Is that the one?
You know what? How about Michael Scott's favorite pizza place?
Sabaro. You know? Yeah,
for sure. All right. We got to run out of here. Thanks a lot to Mike Robbie, our producer. Thanks a lot for downloading, subscribing, listening, wherever you do on audio. And of course, at the Sal Sports YouTube page on video. For Matt Bove, I'm Sal Capaccio. And of course, make sure you check us out. WKBW TV for Matt. WGR Sports Radio 550 for me. We'll be all over it for the Bills and the Jets on Monday Night Football. Have a great weekend, everybody.